Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
John, you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other. We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work.
Because nobody's closing me out of my business.
Willie Hutch, what's up, everybody? This is Eric Citizen Payne. This is Kay's son and friends. I'm the son, Eric Citizen Payne, and hopefully you guys out there are listening. I got my brother here, the legendary historian Byron Saunders, the legendary newsman Wayne Gilman, and we will see what we can see. We've got a lot to talk about. What I wanted to say for this episode of Kay's son and friends, Kay's son, my mom, up there in heaven. That's Willie Hutch, by the way. Brother's going to work it out from Mac. I'm on that old school stuff, as you could probably tell, ladies and gentlemen. But that's a serious song when you listen to it, right? That's a message to us as a people, as black people, what we have to do to make things right for our community. So, you know, today's the 3rd of February. That impeachment trial is getting closer. Joe Biden is set to give people $1,400 stimulus checks, and the vaccines are in short supply, for particularly for black and brown people. Really interesting how all of these people who were deniers of the virus were talking all this stuff are the first in line in a lot of situations, coming from up in the suburbs to the community, getting those doses. And, you know, I saw a statistic, some crazy statistic, 48% of white people in the population got the vaccines, while only, 15% of African-Americans and an equally smaller percentage of Latinos, Latinx population, as compared to their percentage of the population. So it's business as usual in America, is what I would say to everybody. And also what they got dealing with over there. It's never thought I would be in agreement with Liz Cheney. Wow. Those Republicans, man, they keep you guessing, don't they? What in the hell is going on with those people over there? Team Cheney or Team Taylor Greene? Racist light or just straight crazy, crazy, nutty racist?
where the racist, where the regular racists will say, oh, she's too damn crazy. She's racist and crazy. They don't mind her racism, but they damn sure mind her crazy, especially when she don't know how to shoot straight. And you know what I mean. So, you know, it's unbelievable that they're choosing this chick over Liz Cheney pretty much, right? I mean, McCarthy's a wimp to me, but it's unbelievable. But we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. I'm going to bring my man Byron in, the legendary newsman, and Wayne should be calling shortly. Let's get Byron in. Brother B, there you go. Go ahead. Byron, you there?
Yes, sir. Well, good evening to all. As the COVID-19 death as of 2 days ago, this is the 3rd of February, but on the 1st of February, and I imagine going into the 2nd for Groundhog's Day, the total dead in the country was 446,267. The infected was 26,440,519, and the national unemployment total over 78 million since last year of January, since this is a year ago. Now, how does that affect African Americans? Because I'm glad you started off sharing with us that impact, because 18% of those national numbers, and I saw in some statistic today, 19%, 18% of the national numbers impacts the African American community. Mm-hmm. So if those numbers are accurate, and they are, I'm telling you, CDC get validated, certified numbers of the 446,267 dead, that impacts to 80,328 African Americans percent alone, Eric.
Well, that's what the equation is in terms of us being whatever. I see.
And if they're on, and if they're infected at over 26 million, that translates to 4,759,293 African Americans infected.
Because what percentage is that now?
And that's growing.
What percentage is that?
18% of that number is impacted in the African American community directly.
You're saying 18% of the population? Where is
18%? That's a modest CDC abstract. And it's really giving a very telling story, because when you talk about the number of unemployed people for African Americans, that means that 14 million unemployed African Americans since last January.
And we weren't
that
all
impacted
that in
real,
the first place.
These are the real numbers that we have to be confronted with. And so for any Republican or independent who stands in the way of trying to give help to the American people, is you must question their patriotism for helping the people they're supposed to represent.
Mm-hmm.
And when you impact on that factoid, to understand why the African American community and people of color are the least being given attention to end their pandemic of the high numbers and the rate of infections and deaths, which then calls into question, are you doing this to systemically or systematically erase us?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's another whole story, isn't it, Eric? Or are you really trying to cure us of a disease you then released into our communities?
Yeah, I mean, that thought does come to mind. that information that I saw was just watching the news tonight about black and brown people. So certainly it comes to mind that, you know, everybody was okay, was listening to the pandemic. I mean, I just realized, and I'm going to bring you in, Wayne, just re-realized the history of the thing, particularly as it pertained. Michigan was a big example for me, because that was the outlier. And that what made sense, that white supremacists came out to protest that. And if we remember, and we talked about it on the show here, that when that whole initial protest in Michigan went down, when they showed up at the Capitol with their guns and stuff like that, was after the news had broken about the coronavirus and the statistics were out of who was being infected and who was most affected by the virus. And that was when that statistic came out, when people said it was black and brown people. that were most affected, because we do the, our communities do the jobs on the front line for the most part. And that was all the racists needed to hear, because then that's why they showed up on Michigan, the ones that exercised their right, because they were like, the hell with it. That's right up our alley. We want these people to be annihilated. And we don't care about wearing masks. And the less masks that are worn, the more chance that they'll get annihilated. So it made perfect sense for all those white supremacists to make those moves when you think back on it now. And a lot of the things that are coming out now with the insurrection and in this trial that are going to come out, when you think back on it, a lot of things are going to make sense. Just like Mikey Sherrill, who was the one that noticed some Republican members giving tours to people the day before the insurrection. I'm going to bring Wayne Gilman in here, the legendary newsman who has seen it and I'm sure covered the likes of Donald Trump back in the day when him and my mom worked at WLIB. Wayne, what's happening, brother?
Hey, my back is killing me from all the snow, but I'm here. Yeah. And there's so many aspects of this ongoing saga with Washington, D.C., that you know, you just don't know where to begin. Every day, there's just another facet to the ongoing story. And again, my anger is with the Republican Party. My anger is with the idiots up there in the Northwest or the Midwest who are elements of the white supremacy. Today, the Canadian government has given strict orders that elements of the Proud Boys are not allowed to cross the border.
They deemed them a terrorist organization.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know. But I also understand that they're, based on what I heard and read, that they are looking, you know, to see if they could prevent, because they're right there, if you're in Detroit, I wouldn't say minutes away from Toronto, but, you know, they're right in the environment there, and the deal is they see what nonsense they've done in this country. But more importantly, I was hearing what Byron was saying earlier about the, you know, that whole element of protest. You know, we really have got to, I don't think I've seen this anywhere, but when that information about Publix, one of the owners, funding well over $1 million to the January 6th, regardless of what their political beliefs are, you can't help but feel, as you said just a moment ago, Eric, there is a common thread. There is a nexus to all that is going on. And I think that, you know, that institution needs to be shut down. I understand it's supposed to be the model of grocery store shopping in the country. I mean, they've managed to beat back places like Walmart when it comes to market share and stuff like that. And it's admirable that they're employee-owned, but still, it's a family-run business, and everybody's entitled to their beliefs, but we should not be funding, supporting, even if I got to drive 10 miles away just to get what I need to get. I shouldn't have to go to a Publix that's, A, in bed with the government down there when it comes to handing out and dispersing the vaccine. And secondly, that one of the family members, I had no idea. I was oblivious to the fact that they were going to stage this rally and it was going to be to that extent. You know, I mean, we have so much to undo here, and it just boggles my imagination. Every time I hear a Republican voice, I mean, other than the 10 who seem to be with it still, you know, Cheney, the Romneys, people of that, and the young man in Kissinger, I think his name is, I forget, you know.
Yeah, Adam Kissinger, he's good.
Yeah, but it's bothersome, man. You know, I thought the worst was over, and the games have just begun.
Well, you know, you ever think that you were going to side or be on Team Cheney? I'm just like, you know, these guys got a whole kind of wacky world going with these Republicans, man. It's like the Matrix.
Yeah.
You got to expect anything, man. They're fighting amongst themselves, and they're trying to decide whether to be down with the racist lady or to be down with Liz Cheney. Straight out race, flat out balls to the wall racist, but nutty.
That's the point about the party.
Yeah, the racist. It's a racist party. I mean, you know, there's nothing new to me.
Well, I can take you back to this moment in time in history, gentlemen, because today, in 1870, it was a Thursday on February the 3rd, the 15th Amendment became engaged and enacted as an ongoing story. Now, for those of you not remembering the history of the 15th Amendment, well, it was constitutionally ratified. And this guaranteed African-American men the right to vote. The 15th Amendment maintains the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by a state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. The text also gives Congress the power to enforce the amendment. Now, although blacks had been freed from American slavery and made citizens after the American Civil War by the 13th and the 14th Amendments, Southern states used a variety of tactics, including violence, to keep blacks from voting, and even some Northern states had not given blacks the franchise. Radical Republicans, I'm going to say that again, radical Republicans in Congress proposed the 15th Amendment to rectify this problem so that most blacks and whites alike believed that the franchise was the best guarantee for progress and success for freed people.
Okay,
however,
let me stop here.
Most whites
stop.
Felt that the, yeah, right. That's incredible,
just,
isn't it?
Just put a button in it, but let me, because you said most radical Republicans put the 15th Amendment. This
yes.
is when the Republic, this is, so let's just, so people can follow clearly.
The Lincoln Party.
This is, hold on, Byron. This is when the Republicans were anti-slavery, just so we're clear, right? So
yes,
this was,
yes,
when
yes,
you say this was put in
through
this was put in by radical Republicans. That means the Republicans at that time were anti-slavery, so it was radical for them to put it in the 15th Amendment there, giving black people the right to vote.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Just wanted
yes.
to throw that in there.
Not to be getting it twisted, because it gets twisted as well.
Right, exactly, you know. Exactly. And people don't know the history anyway, and that's why we're in this position in the first place, because on their
right.
side,
so
they don't,
blacks,
not only don't they know it, they're not interested
and,
in knowing it.
That's right. See, now, most blacks and whites alike believed that the franchise was the best guarantee for progress and success for freed people, and most whites felt that the right to participate in the political process was really all the nation-owned former slaves really wanted. I'm going to say that one more time, because, see, you don't ever get this from this perspective. This is from the African-American Registry's perspective. It says, and I'll say it again, is that most whites felt that the right to participate in the political process was really all the nation-owned former slaves, that's all the nation was to owe former slaves, really wanted the right to vote. But debate immediately arose over how strongly worded the amendment should be, and many Republicans feared that if the language was not strong, the South would keep blacks from voting through poll taxes and violence.
Right.
Other
so
Republicans,
that's,
however,
that's been going on. We and thus. Yeah. We know, and so it turned out. We know how it turned out. And so you just want to finish that point, other Republicans, what?
Yeah, because the other Republicans, however, believe that all states, Northern and Southern, should have the right to keep illiterate citizens from voting. See? Catch this drift now. Fears of the growing influence of foreign immigrants popularized the literacy test to limit their power.
Oh, so there were the kind of moderate the Republicans that weren't really down with that. That's what I'm talking about. But all of that
yeah.
whole, we got some Democrats that are kind of a little moderate like that nowadays. But
yeah.
I mean, this is it's nothing new, and this is what they've been doing since back in those days.
And it wasn't until 1965 that the discrimination in voting began to end, and courts enforced the 15th Amendment. So that and I said 1870 to 1965.
What, that it had to be reinforced again, or
it had to be that it was finally used in the proper manner in which it was.
But it's still just a piece of structure. It's still just all words to a certain extent, right? As we know, it was all words to a certain extent back then, because, like I always say, your honor system is only good when the, you know what, that participate and have honor. What do you guys think? Let's move on to this impeachment trial and the fact that these guys are still riding with this dude. You know, McCarthy went down and visited him in Florida. I don't know how they made him the head of their party, really, because that dude is stupid. I mean, if you ever heard, this is just me talking, and I know people might get upset about people making their opinions, but I think he's a moron. Yes, I do, because I've heard him speak at length. And
you think?
It just goes to show you, this is why, you know, these people relate to some of these people, because they're not playing chess. They're not the most brilliant, you know, and got this trial coming in. I don't know about the moves. I don't mean it looks like they're not going to vote to convict their boy. But I was listening to some people saying it was an interesting predicament to put them in, right, to try to jam them with that and with Marjorie Taylor Greene, getting her off of these committees, make the ones have to support her and then kind of jam them like that. And then Trump coming in with the impeachment. Part of his argument is still going to be that he was, the election was stolen from him. So we should see what happens within the next day or two with that, right?
I tell you one thing that, if I might, what bothers me is that, you know, there was a clip, and God rest his soul, he was on the right side of history on a lot of things. The late Elijah Cummings, at one point, was trying to make an argument with McCarthy. I forgot exactly what the circumstances were, but he said, you know, Kevin McCarthy is my friend, and we do have the right to disagree on different things. They play it back periodically on the news.
He said that about Mark Meadows, too.
Yeah, you know, right.
Look what a bastard
right.
He turned out to be.
Yeah, and this is not to, you know, and I understand what spirit Cummings was coming from, but, you know, when you stop and, you know, these people, there's like a congeniality test that they all go through when they walk through the doors to make sure that everybody is in lockstep in terms of being friends without ripping each other up. But once you go in there doing the people's work, it's a completely different story. I was out cleaning the snow today, but I heard this lady Green got up and had something to say with respect to the movement to have her derail from one of the posts that she's been given with education, and I heard that they applauded her. I mean, what is this freaking world coming to? I mean, her stuff is documented, you know? I mean,
it's coming to where it's always been,
bro.
It ain't coming to nothing. It's where it's always been. We just thought it was going someplace else.
And the thing is that, you know, we are trying to bring about a peaceful resolution after what we've been through the last 4 years. And I still think with all the efforts being made by big business to really undermine the Trump brand, over a period of time, things will go away. But right now, there is too much kinetic energy out here to basically bring about, you know, the kind of armed combat that I fear that may come, because a lot of it just doesn't make sense. These are the same hypocrites that were honoring this man today in the rotunda, some of them, you know. And it was just one, and there was a reference earlier that I understand the Washington cop who died, the Capitol policeman who died, was a Trump supporter, you know, but he saw beyond, you know, he was one of those, I guess, Republicans that believed in fairness, and when Trump lost, he acknowledged the loss. There was no bitterness, you know, in his soul. And the deal is that he did his job, did it honorably, and still had to face these idiots on the six, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and it just hurts me to think that, you know, somebody, I don't politically agree with what he had to say, but it's just, it amazes me when I think back of the crap this man stirred up in New York. The series of articles that Wayne Barrett had written, and God rest his soul, he died just before this man was elected president. And look what this world has come to. It's a goddamn shame.
You know, there's a certain level, there's a certain, you talk about this guy was a Trump supporter, but he accepted the fact that Trump lost, the process worked, just like the people in Georgia, you know, the Secretary of State there and the guy running the election there, they're both avid Trump supporters. And even the one guy that he really laid on, the thinner guy, there's rumors that, you know, he kind of laid on, you know, he was down with Brian Kemp in terms of suppressing the turnout for Stacey. But at this election, both of those guys, you know, they did the right thing, I guess, because the world was watching. So there's a lot more pressure on. But I don't want to denigrate or take away from those people that are Republicans that believe in the system and say, you lost, they voted for him. I do question their personality, or who they are, the fact that they voted for him the fact that they voted for him in the first place. Of course, that's a question to me, obviously. But there's the point I want to make is there's a thing about service that a lot of people have worked in positions of authority or positions of running society, government, police force, fire department, army, I would suppose, and other positions too that are responsible for the community. But after a minute, people who really do it and do it for the right reasons, they understand there's service involved. It's a service in terms of, I've talked about this before, in terms of something greater than yourself. So, for example, I'll give you my experience. When I go to D.C., when I've gone to D.C. before, and maybe this just might be the way that I was programmed as a young kid growing up with a father that was active in the civil rights movement, mother that was an artist that was also active as well, was educated. You know, they were of that civil rights generation, and being exposed to those things and understanding the process, the very things that you talk about, Byron, the Constitution, of these great papers and great things that dictate where our society and government should go. You believe in that, you know, and that's why sometimes you should believe in that, because there's a decorum, even though our people were considered not a part of the society, right? We bought into that. We bought into the American narrative is what I'm saying. And so when you go to D.C. and you see these monuments to our country, right, these great monuments and these halls and these buildings where these speeches were made and this and that, even in the states across the country, you know, state governments and all that, there's a certain measure of service that a lot of people adhere to, a belief in something greater than themselves. And the differences stop here, because this is where we make it work. This is where we choose to make our society either work together or we go up in flames together. And people who haven't served before, even George Bush, that's what I'm talking about, keeping the continuity of a society going. People who've served in government understand that. Keeping the lights on, keeping the water running, making sure people are safe in the streets. They understand that. So when you get people who don't understand that or don't come from a background of that, that's why Liz Cheney, you know, that's why I believe she clicked in once it started talking about violence. Obviously, for a lot of them, it had to go real far, but at least and at least they drew the line. They understand that this in this house, in the House of Representatives, we have to reason things out. The violence we worked out, we're supposed to have worked out years ago, where the violence is coming to the very Capitol, right? But, you know, you get individuals who are criminals, con people, who don't understand, and then they're lying to individuals who don't understand the notion of service and something greater than yourself and your country and all of that. That's what happens, you know? But there's something to be said for people. People want to talk about politicians or people who serve in government, and even the career professionals that they chose to denigrate, or people really kind of are nonpartisan. But there's something about that. And a lot of those people, when you go in those environments, on the state level, city level, federal level, the people understand that. And they know they have a responsibility. And they try to get things done. So because they affect so many people's lives. And it's just a travesty, like you said, Wayne, that that guy had to give his life protecting the individuals that he agreed with, at least from a voting standpoint. Right?
Yeah.
Because, and how much stuff, that's what I said, you know, how much stuff does white supremacy trump? Right? Excuse the pun. I mean, you know, do they really believe in democracy? Or like I said before, is it selective democracy for them, but not for everybody else? Because it sure appears that when it didn't work out the way they wanted it to work out, they're willing to overthrow it again. You know, I saw a documentary the other night about Timothy McVeigh and talking about a lot of these people now in this militia white supremacist movement and a couple of these organizations, or at least the big three. A lot of them, you know, they hold Timothy McVeigh in a place of honor in their mind. Crazy as he was.
Well, I clearly don't know the answer. I mean, at this point, you know, we come from an era, at least I can speak for myself, that I saw the Black Panther movement, the Black Liberation Army all rise. And to a certain extent, there was a level of respectability in the areas in which, you know, they presided until they came in contact with the conventional law enforcement, the paramilitary that everybody has to answer to. But the deal is, there was a reason why these things happen. And I'm not saying that we have to go back to that, but sometimes I wonder, you know? I don't even know if that's going to bring about respect, because half these people who belong to this supremacist movement are highly uneducated. They're following a tradition that perhaps their parents had, and their mindsets were basically shaped around what their parents did, and they're not part of the world that we live in. And I think that, I don't know how you go about undoing it. I don't think it's a Lincoln Project alone.
The ignorance is what makes them susceptible to that stuff, right? I mean, that's always been the case since
exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Since the beginning, that's been the case.
But if we have to go back to what seems to be some measure of normalcy, there's got to be a balance. And I really think the onus is on the freaking Republican Party. And again, this is not a congeniality contest. This is not about if you're about just wanting to win votes and massaging your ego because you think that you're a great orator and talk about issues that you feel that you could embrace just to draw a crowd. We don't need you, man. We're all in this ball of dirt together. You know,
yeah.
We all have to, whether you like me or not, because, you know, I came from an island, or, you know, my some ancestors, you know, were Native Americans and stuff like that. We're all here together. We have to get along. Can't we get along, as Rodney King said? You know? It's just sad. But, you know, they got to do something with social media. They got to do something with cable news. And I think that's largely part of the problem right there, you know. I've been saying that for weeks now. I don't know if anybody's listening.
You know, Wayne, a direct response to that, I don't know if you saw this. I was watching today MSNBC, Nicole Wallace, watching her show, and she had a clip about the pillow guy was on Newsmax. I don't know if Byron might have seen, I don't know if you saw this, Byron, but they had a clip of the guy, the pillow guy on Newsmax, and he's making these claims. And the anchor's like, listen, you know, we can't say that. It's been proven by independent sources, and we of our station have called it, and the crazy pillow guy was still going on about this and that and yada yada, and the guy and there was another anchor. She tried to jump in and said, "Wait a minute, guys, let me just say," and the other dude, just you see him walk up out of the shot. He gets up and leaves his chair because the pillow guy is talking such crazy stuff. But you know, the big thing that is changing the minds, doing the very thing that you're wondering when it's going to happen, Wayne, is that Dominion machines, the company Dominion that made the voting machines that Rudy lied about and all these guys went and ran with the lie, they're slapping a $1.25 billion lawsuit on Rudy.
Good.
On Fox, I think, and Newsmax, and a couple of these other right-wing stations, if they're for defamation.
Yeah.
And so that's why they've changed their tune now, where they can't allow people to come on and just say those lies anymore. And I guess the pillow guy, who's just as crazy and despicable as the Publix lady that you're talking about.
Can you imagine?
You know, because he was talking about instituting martial law, so we know where he's coming from. You know, who would have thunk it? You see this dude on TV making these commercials. He's got the little, necklace where they make sure that the cross is prominently displayed, hanging out of his shirt. And here this guy was talking about martial law so Trump could steal the election. Wow. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And you think these people, it just goes to show you, man, that there are still, you know, this is what I've been saying, that everybody's talking about. But Trump, he's got 74 million people. Yeah, he's still got a lot of people. It used to be everybody in America used to be racist, as far as I'm concerned. Everybody used to be racist, not just the 74 million. It's 74 million because we got 320. That's why everybody's tripping. And they keep going over the fact, and this is where when you're talking about the media, Wayne, and I agree with you, even the media that seems to be pro-progressive media, where they try to continue to drive home the fact that he has 74 million and Biden needs to, you know, it's like that narrative, continuing to establish that narrative or further the narrative that the pressure is on the Democrats for unity and reach across the aisle. Even after all this heinous shit that's gone down, you know, they still try to establish a narrative, but he's got 74 million people that vote. So what? Joe had 80. Joe had 80 million people that voted for him. And there's still another 120.
Some of them might have been Trump supporters at one time.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's still another 100 and some odd million people in the country that didn't even participate in the process. So who's to tell how they would vote? So that whole, it just bothered me that people that the news outlets kept, a number of them kept talking about, but he's got 74 million people. I mean, just like they're trying to make some hay out of, the Republicans' COVID response bill. You know, will Biden, you know, try to swirl around the questioning of will he stick to the $1,400 stimulus that he promised everybody and yada, yada. They just seem like to me they try to create the doubt. And, of course, he came out and said, yeah, no, we're going to give everybody $1,400 checks, you know, and hopefully the Democrats don't turn into the punks like I often accuse them of being sometimes. And not only sticking to their guns, but blowing their own horn. You know, we need better PR in terms of what we're given and what they're given. You know, the COVID relief bill that the Republicans are given, you know, they don't want to give everybody $1,400. They wanted to cut it back to $1,000. They wanted to pinpoint it to make sure it's the most poorest people that need it. But, you know, Democrats need to compare the two programs, man, and let everybody see this is what they're offering all of y'all. All of y'all that might not have voted for us, you know, and this is what we're
all comes down to. It all comes down to the fact that they don't want to give all that money to people of color.
Exactly.
It's as racist as the profile itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's as racist as the party itself. They are reflecting the racist position that they have mired themselves in, and everything that they eschew. It comes out tainted and infected with racism.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
I agree with you, but I tell you, Byron, the one thing that these Republicans seem to miss out on is the fact that we are the engines to this economy. We're the ones doing the freaking grunt work. You know,
they don't want us to get access to their power or their money. This is all that this is. All that other stuff is. Yeah, you're right. But do you think they want you to have access to the GameStop?
Oh, please.
Hedge fund
situation? Isn't that interesting?
Come on, now. Come on. Because let's talk money now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
somebody runs off with the Treasury.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden they finally put the kibosh on that crap. But, you know, you have to think about why would something
treasury.
Like that
That's
start,
you
know? it's crazy. You know, I mean, and the thing is, it really gets to me is that, you know, getting back to this whole thing with the lies that the right-wing media seems to purport all the freaking time, I got into a little argument with a long-time friend of mine over the weekend because I am constantly ridiculing what goes on in the right-wing media, and then this person had the audacity to make a comparison between that what is being factually or at least substantiated a part of the right, at least coming from a progressive perspective, and comparing it to a Wendy Williams documentary. And God bless Wendy. Any black woman who's got 5 cents of their own in their pocket, I applaud. Tremendous talent. Your mom and her parents go way back. But the bottom line is that they're just two different schools of thought, you know. And I'm talking about...
You lost me with the comparison to Wendy.
I found it astounding because I couldn't understand where this young lady was coming from with respect to an analogy. You know, if somebody wants to go on the tube for 90 minutes and expose their personal life, and I even think even that is making her money. You know, God bless her. She's doing She's not hurting anybody.
That's what I call a hard left, bro. You were talking about the Republican Party, and she brings in Wendy.
No, but I couldn't believe when this girl was
a person. Maybe they're not well. Maybe they.
Yeah, probably. I couldn't believe this, and justifying a Jeanine Pirro and a Greg Kelly and you know, please, they're spectacles.
Well, what they do is always do that equivalent. They always do try to do that false equivalence thing, you know, the tit for tat thing. And there is no equivalent for the despicable behavior. That's the whole thing about it. And, you know, that's usually what people who do despicable things do. They try to bring other people in and say, well, what you did was just as bad, you know. I want to shift a little bit of the gears here. Before I do, you guys saw this story tonight about in Naples, Florida. The NBC crew was actually covering another story, and they had to pull over at this supermarket because they noticed that nobody was wearing masks in the place. It was looking like before the pandemic, and they were tripping. And the dude that owns it is a Trump supporter, and he doesn't believe in wearing masks. And they had some loophole for them to get out of it, like, you know, the government says we have to wear a mask. However, if you have a medical condition, we can't force you to wear one. If you have a medical condition that says you can't. So the sign gives them a way not to have to wear it. And they had the footage in there, and these people in there, you would think it's before the pandemic. That's what the footage looked like. And it's just unbelievable, you know, what these people do. And then they'll be the first ones in line. But I just wanted to point that out, man. And I kind of think what you said earlier, maybe we should look at it like Trump and not help those areas that went so hard and don't believe in the pandemic and let them work it out themselves. Before we jump off, about another 16 minutes, just under 17 minutes left, but I want to talk about a couple of TV shows, man. I happened to see One Night in Miami the other night. Watch that on Amazon. You know the flick. Talking about the night that Muhammad Ali won the heavyweight title. And was hanging with Malcolm, Sam Cooke, and Jim Brown, and it deals with, you know, their night and what they experience and discussions and hanging out. It was pretty good. It was actually pretty good. I actually had heard about the project because my former partner at Drop Squad Pictures was working with someone that is doing the publicity end for it, and he was telling me about it, and he had mentioned there's a scene in the movie that sounded not believable to me. And he was saying, yeah, he had an issue with it too. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it worked out, and the scene works in the movie, and it's earned, and it makes sense. But I never even knew about this thing that these guys got together after Muhammad Ali, kind of like a little power summit, you know, because Sam Cooke was really powerful in terms of his entertainment and what he was doing as an entertainer. And also the business side of it, he was flipping it big time. And, of course, Jim Brown, that was a time at the height of his career, jumping into movies, Muhammad Ali and then Malcolm getting ready to leave the nation. But I knew of the relationship between Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X, but I didn't know before those guys were as tight as they were. But obviously it makes sense. All of those individuals at such a high level of fame and fortune and power and relatively young brothers too. It must have been a really cool thing. Because, you know, I didn't know. Go ahead, Wayne.
No, I was just going to say, I would like to see that, but I know, and maybe Byron could help me with this, but wasn't there some controversy around the death of Sam Cooke? I mean, because of, you know, he was growing in the ranks and his fame and fortune was at a point where he really didn't need anybody's help. He was like a forerunner, you know, of that particular time in terms, because you're at the height of the civil rights movement. You were still going into places to perform where blacks were escorted through the back doors as opposed to the front, couldn't swim in their swimming pools and places like that. And for some reason, you know, I have to jog my memory, but I thought there was a connection or a link between his murder and that somebody had set him up because he was getting too prominent.
Didn't deal with his death at all in the movie, but I saw there was a documentary on the other night about gospel, and it had a lot of Sam Cooke and those guys. Not the Jazz Ambassadors. I was watching that the other day, but this was the gospel something that was on PBS the other night, and it really highlighted Sam Cooke, and it talked about how when he went into secular music, right, he really blew up, and he was owning his own masters recordings,
right,
and he was really getting up there powerful. He had a label. He had groups that were making money. So when I thought about that slightly, they were saying this woman, the lady who allegedly killed him, said that she was the hotel manager, and they claimed there was a prowler, and claimed that he was looking for the girl that he picked up at the club that they ended up at the spot or something like that. So just to me, they had footage of the woman testifying, and her vibe to me, the fact that it didn't seem right. Let's just say that. And that it doesn't surprise me. And I thought I heard something. I thought it was something else that the woman that he was hanging with that they ended up at the hotel with might have set him up. But it definitely sounds like something like that, you know, like the same thing they were saying about Michael too, and Prince, right? You know, they get so powerful and their music and the rights to their music, all of their catalogs was worth so much, you know, that's in certain circumstances. I heard that rumor too in connection with Whitney as well. So,
It's sobering, but you know, yeah, it is possible. But I'd like to see that. I heard a lot of talk, but you said one of your friends, your colleagues, had a problem with some of the material, or
no. There was a particular scene that we both took issue with, that I was taking issue with in the thing about something that happens in the movie. But it kind of works out when you see the movie. So
okay.
I guess they just had to present it in the right way, the right fashion. So, and I think that was part of the issue too, that the PR person was asking his input in relation to how certain things would be perceived, you know, in the film. So I think that was one of the points that he made to her, you know, this particular thing probably wouldn't happen, or wouldn't happen the way it was initially attempted to do it.
To present it, yeah. Well, the only one who's still around from that group is Jim Brown. I don't know. He's an octogenarian now. I'm certain he must be that old. Or, you know, I don't know if he's commented on it or what.
What are you saying, Byron?
You know, I think when you start following the money trail guys and who's spending it, and then you begin to ask the questions, well, why are certain things happening? I think you come to a better conclusion than following the trail of the tripping the light fantastic, because those folks, that's what we live in. You and I are theater, television, TV, media personalities. We know what that's all about. We follow that. We help generate it. But for most people, like politics, and what really goes on in Washington, D.C., very few people really comprehend what power is all about.
Oh, you're talking about we have those guys. Okay. I didn't know where you were coming from, a different place.
Well,
I don't know about you, Wayne, but I was trying to follow you, brother. Okay.
Ahead, we have to ferret through all of the stuff that we are asked to navigate. Some of it is all flash, boom, bang. Some of it is really certified crazy. And then the other parts of it, you have to kind of put the puzzle pieces together because they do add up to a certain message that we're supposed to make sure we get. Mm-hmm. Now, it's clouded by a lot of lies and a lot of theatrics. And we're going to see that over the next couple of weeks. This trial is more about
we're talking about one night in Miami, bro. You must have dozed off a little bit.
Yeah, I'm talking about that too. Because that one night, I'll connect it. That one night in Miami set in motion much of the focus of the cultural nationalists and that moment of those powerful men being able to have a voice. And so we are the byproduct of that moment, that voice that was established then. They were very powerful men. I remember it very well.
You're exactly right. And also the realization of bringing, because I think that's when you look at that meeting of those minds and the potential, because when you realize that Sam was really one of the most famous, besides him and Muhammad Ali, and Malcolm X, you know, Sam was, they were said, like we were saying, he was gaining in popularity and in power in the music industry. And music was the way to reach the masses, right? When he was challenged by Bob Dylan's song, which is why he wrote A Change Is Gonna Come, you know?
Yeah.
And you figured Jim Brown and the moves that those brothers were making, because you remember they had that economic summit back in the day. You know, and they were talking about that.
Right.
That's the kind of moves. I mean, that's the kind of moves that need to be made, you know. And those examples need to be heeded. And you're right; they probably, you know, the larger power structures that could see a larger picture work to destroy that. Obviously, you know, just like they wanted to kill Dr. King once he started talking about foreign policy, things like that. On top of, you know, the racists that were hating them. Also, the Golden Globes were out today. I don't know. I didn't see none of them. I don't know what nominations were. I don't know if you or know of any of them, Byron.
I took a brief look at them. I'll say this about the award season. For those of us who are people of color in it, it'll be interesting to see how Bridgerton changes the dynamics of best costumes, best period piece, and things of that nature, because otherwise it's back to the same old, same old. Golden Globe Awards, you know, the foreign press, yes, we understand. You know, they blocked out Spike Lee at the foreign media, and so are we back to the same old, Eric, or are we progressively moving forward? Because I see you doing work, New Amsterdam. I see other storylines being promoted and published and mixed in, and I follow the festival routes, and I see a proliferation of our efforts being manifested, and I'm very happy to be a part of that mixture, as to see you working and all my good friends.
You know what I want to see? I want to see the Black Jesus and the Messiah.
Yes,
you know the one
absolutely.
With Fred Hampton?
Cause
that movie looks like it's going to do some damage.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Coming to America 2, which is coming out. Yeah, it's getting ready to come out.
Yeah,
in the spring. Yes. So you see, I mean, this is Black History Month time. The gentlemen, this is only the third day of Black History Month. Let's celebrate.
Man, I'm celebrating Black History Month all year round, bro. I don't be waiting for the month. It's just extra special because this is my birthday month, so Black History. I am Black History, bro.
That's what I'm
on Lincoln's birthday. You know?
Is that the 22nd? Or
That would be the 12th. The 22nd is George.
You said Lincoln's birthday.
So we're
going to celebrate Eric and Honest Abe, two men of distinction. Okay, And so,
but I mean the revolution. My revolution.
All right, I'm ready for you. Come
political
on.
Purposes, you know. But you're right about a lot of the kind of the same old stuff. You know, I tried to watch. I got to watch it again. I got to double check. And maybe I should IMDb it right now. I've never watched This Is Us. You know, it's the rave show. Everybody's raving about it, this and that. Let me make this point. And I think I tried to watch it one day. I've seen clips, you know, Sterling Brown. They highlight the brother a lot. He's a good actor. But I thought that I was watching it the other day, and they said his name. And I think they said his name was Toby. I got a double check.
Boy.
But I think they had this brother's character named Toby.
Oh,
and that for me, I was like, last night I called a quick clip of it again. I didn't realize it was on. I turned on Channel 4, This Is Us is on. And the mom, they were doing something, and he wasn't in the scene. But they were like, did you call so-and-so? Did you call Toby? I was like, now all the stuff about this show being all this, and the brother's winning, he's the standout. He's won several Best Actor Awards. I was like, did they really? And it's a family, and they adopt a little black boy and a little girl, and they adopt a little black boy. Okay, great, whatever. I was like, did these writers really have the nerve to name the brother Toby? Is there no, you know what I'm saying? It's just the insidious, and I don't even know if they realized it, but come on, man. Black people have not been fucking with Toby since Roots. Come on, man. I'm like, I got to look it up. Maybe I'll look it up. Maybe let me IMDb while we're on the phone.
You asked me about the Golden Globe Awards, so I'm asking you. Which one are we going to work with this year?
I mean,
are we
going to
go
like
with Kunta Kinte? Are we going
to
go with Bridgerton? Which one you want?
If I write a movie and name a character Jaime in the series that's playing all great and everybody like that.
You don't want to go there, brother.
But I'm saying, you know, did they not know the significance of Toby and maybe we're too old. Maybe if it's written by some other people, you know, that are a lot younger and other generations, Gen X, Gen whatever Gen they want to be, and they don't know the significance of that scene in that movie from when I was a kid. So Roots came out when I was a kid, and maybe they don't really know the significance. But to name the character Toby. Hold the flow. Okay, no, his name is not Toby. Somebody else's name is Toby. Okay, the white dude. Cool.
All right. See, there are a couple of things that you hope that we can evolve from. One is in every sci-fi movie, the first person killed is not a black guy. And then the other one is that we ultimately can get past, you know, the Underground Railroad so we can find somewhere where Wakanda really is, okay?
A Black Panther series is supposed to be being done by Disney.
We're going to go there with Disney World.
I'm trying to get down with that. So we come up on just about under 2 minutes, gentlemen. If you want to, Byron, give the people you send off, tell them your parting words of wisdom that you would suggest.
Absolutely. I just wanted everybody to know that in Washington, D.C., we are fixing what was broken. Be understanding, patient, and know it's all about the optics. Pay attention, because more is about to be revealed. More truth is about to reveal. Peace and love always. Thank you.
I'm sorry, B. I got a little sound in your outro there. We'll talk to you again, Brother Byron Saunders. Wayne.
Hey, man. I just quickly want to say, if my beloved sister Wendy's listening, I don't mean to compare you to Laura Ingraham or Jeanine Pirro. That was somebody else's argument. God bless you.
Okay. All right. There it is. Wayne Gilman leaving us with something to think about. All right. You get it, brother. All right, ladies and gentlemen, everybody, sports fans, everybody listening around out there, this has been Kay's Son and Friends. We had to talk about a few things. And, we're going to continue to talk about a few things, because if we don't, who will, right? And so what's the parting words we could live? You know, it's Willie Hutch. This song has been on my mind because, you know, our people have to work it out, black people. And we got to work out the stuff amongst ourselves and to prepare ourselves because we see that the enemy, those who would hold us back, are always at work, man. They're always at work. So we got to get ourselves together and be united, strong together, a beautiful race. I'm out. K, son of friends.
Nobody's closing me out of my business.